If you look at the space right under your television right now, there's a very high probability that it's completely empty.
Yeah, probably just gathering dust.
Exactly. And, you know, for decades, that specific piece of real estate in your living room was sacred. It belonged to the box.
Right, the console.
Yeah, that heavy plastic fan-whirring piece of hardware that you had to, you know, replace every 5 to 7 years. But welcome to the year 2026. The era of that rigid, depreciating hardware sitting under your TV is officially completely dead.
It's totally gone.
I mean, Sony canceled the highly anticipated heavy PlayStation 6 SKUs. The next-gen physical Xbox is just, it's gone. That empty space under your TV is the ultimate proof that the rules of the digital world have changed around you. So, okay, let's unpack this.
Let's do it.
For today's deep dive, we are exploring this massive mega analytical article from Tech and Mag. It's titled The Death of Hardware. And the central question we are trying to answer today is this. How did the fundamental laws of thermodynamics force an entire multi-billion dollar industry to completely assassinate the home console and somehow convince us to enthusiastically surrender our digital ownership along the way?
Yeah, and setting the baseline here is really crucial because we need to understand that this isn't just about video games.
Right.
This is arguably the biggest paradigm shift in consumer electronics in the last 40 years. I mean, every single screen you own right now, from your living room smart TV to the windshield display of your electric vehicle, is effectively a high-end gaming console.
Because it's connected directly to a multi-billion dollar data center.
Exactly. And what's fascinating here is how the absolute unbreakable physical limitations of hardware literally forced this industry into the cloud. It wasn't just a business choice, right? It was a physics mandate.
So before we look up at the cloud, we really have to look down at the ground and understand why local hardware just, well, failed to keep up.
Mm-hmm.
The Tech and Make piece shares a pretty stark insight from Dr. Lisa Su, the CEO of AMD, from a recent 2026 earnings call. She explicitly stated that we simply hit the ceiling of Moore's Law for consumer electronics.
Yeah, we hit what engineers call the thermal wall.
The thermal wall.
Right. Because you have to remember the baseline requirement of consumer electronics. People want sleek, quiet boxes in their living rooms.
Right. They don't want a jet engine roaring while they watch a movie.
Exactly. But the industry standard for graphics shifted to photorealistic path tracing. And path tracing isn't just, you know, drawing polygons and slapping a texture on them.
No, it's way more intense.
It is physically calculating the trajectory of millions of individual light photons bouncing off virtual surfaces in real time. It calculates how light bends through glass, how it reflects off a puddle, how it absorbs into the skin.
Which sounds like a nightmare for a processor.
Oh, it literally sets silicon on fire. The thermal limitations of a box that fits under a TV meant we could never truly achieve it. It just generates far too much heat.
So having a local console try to process full-scale path tracing is essentially like trying to power your entire house by building a noisy, heavily polluting, literal coal power plant right there in your living room.
That is a great way to put it.
It's wildly inefficient, it's dangerous, and it's loud. What the industry did in 2026 was say, forget the local power plant. They plugged every television directly into a distant, silent, massive nuclear grid. And that central grid is the cloud data center.
And that analogy holds up perfectly when you look at how games are actually made now. Like, developers using modern creation tools like Unreal Engine 6, they don't even think about the constraints of your local hardware anymore.
They don't care about the coal plant in your living room.
Not at all. They are designing massive digital worlds that specifically target server clusters, boasting dozens of interconnected enterprise GPUs all working in tandem. Yeah, so heavy computations like real-time fluid dynamics, incredibly advanced AI behaviors where thousands of NPCs have individual routines, all of that is executed on the server side. What comes back to you is literally just an interactive 8K video feed.
Which fundamentally alters the barrier to entry, right? I mean, the tech giants completely pivoted their entire consumer strategy.
Oh, totally.
Now, you literally only need a $20 cloud stick or honestly just the pre-installed Xbox Cloud and PlayStation Stream apps that come default on Samsung and LG TVs.
Yeah.
You sync a controller via Bluetooth and you're in.
Yep, yep.
Plus, we permanently eliminated the absolute worst friction of modern gaming. Those 100 gigabyte day one patches that used to take 6 hours to download. You just hit play and the data center handles the rest.
It's seamless. But, you know, moving all of that processing to the cloud solves the graphics problem and it solves the storage problem. But it introduces what has historically been the gamer's absolute worst nightmare.
Input lag.
Input lag.
Wait, I have to stop here. Because if you move the rendering from a box 3 feet away from me to a server that is potentially 1,000 miles away, you introduce a physical barrier that cannot be ignored.
The physics of distance.
Right. I play competitive shooters.
Yeah.
If the server is in Virginia and I'm in California, the speed of light in fiber optics is literally too slow. If I pull the trigger in Call of Duty and my character fires half a second later, the game is completely unplayable. So how do you beat the literal speed of light?
Well, you don't beat the speed of light. You shorten the track.
Okay.
The industry attacked latency from multiple angles, entirely restructuring global network topology. First, we had the global rollout of ultra-dense 6G wireless networks in urban environments, combined with Starlink V4 low-Earth orbit satellites covering the rural areas.
Right, the new satellite array.
Exactly, but the real heavy lifting is done by edge computing. AWS and Azure didn't just build 5 massive data centers in the middle of nowhere. They rolled out thousands of micro data centers.
Oh, micro data centers.
Yeah, so when you press that trigger on your controller, your input isn't traveling across the country. It's going to an edge node located right in your local city, maybe just a few miles from your house. They decentralized the rendering process to physically shorten the distance the data has to travel.
Okay, sure. But a micro data center in my city doesn't solve the last mile problem.
What do you mean?
I mean, it doesn't solve the fact that my own home Wi-Fi router is still dropping packets. If my roommate starts downloading a massive file or someone walks in front of the router, my ping spikes. Edge computing doesn't fix the interference happening inside my own living room.
And that was the final boss of cloud gaming, and they defeated it with motion prediction AI.
Are you what?
Yeah, those edge servers aren't just reacting to your inputs. They are running algorithms that literally anticipate your next move.
You're kidding.
No, seriously. The server renders multiple probable frames before your finger even finishes pressing the button. If it knows you are running toward a corner, it has already rendered the frame of you turning left and the frame of you turning right. So when your delayed input finally arrives, the server simply displays the correct pre-rendered frame instantly. It masks the network jitter entirely.
Which sounds like science fiction, but the raw numbers from Tekken Mag's testing labs are wild.
Hmm.
The average global ping is now down to just 8 milliseconds.
It's incredible.
North American fiber to the home is sitting at a 6 millisecond ping. European urban 6G is at 12 milliseconds. Even South American rural connections using Starlink V4 hitting 28 milliseconds.
Yeah, it's night and day compared to the old tech.
Legacy copper wire internet, which used to drag you down with over 55 milliseconds of lag, is virtually extinct for gaming.
The infrastructure finally caught up to the vision.
But hold on. If the vision was always cloud gaming, and the infrastructure just needed a few years to catch up, why did Google Stadia spectacularly fail back in 2019?
Ah, Stadia.
Right. Google essentially invented the modern data center. They had the capital, they had the edge nodes. If the cloud was the inevitable future, how did they miscalculate so badly?
Well, the Tech and Mag article dedicates a whole section to this, actually calling it the autopsy of a failure. Google fundamentally misunderstood the physics of client-side video decoding.
How so?
Stadia relied on a traditional video compression algorithm called H.265, or HEVC. Now, HEVC is fantastic for static, predictable video. Like, if you're watching a movie on Netflix, the algorithm uses intra-frame prediction. It knows that the background of a scene isn't going to change much from frame to frame, so it only sends data for the moving actors.
Which saves a massive amount of bandwidth.
Exactly the goal. But video games are highly unpredictable. You turn the camera suddenly, and every single pixel on the screen changes instantly.
Right, there is no static background.
Right. So when Stadia tried to apply HEVC to interactive gaming frames, the moment there was even a 1% packet loss on the network, the stream couldn't predict the next frame. It would suffer severe artifacting, like the screen would turn into a blocky, smeared, unplayable mess.
But wait. If a 4K stream relying on old compression methods melted a Google dongle in 2019, an 8K stream with path tracing in 2026 should cause a literal house fire.
Hmm.
How are they pushing 8K resolution over standard home internet without the TVs bursting into flames?
Through a breakthrough called neural video compression.
Okay, what is that?
So instead of the server sending massive amounts of individual pixel color data over the internet, the server just sends mathematical motion vectors.
So like a formula?
Basically, yeah. It sends the math of the image. Then a dedicated AI chip inside your 2026 smart TV, which requires a very specific 5 TOPS neural processing unit, takes those vectors and literally hallucinates the missing pixels locally to regenerate a flawless 8K 4K image.
Let me make sure I am visualizing this correctly. It's like the server is sending a script to an actor rather than sending a massive uncompressed video of a performance.
Yes.
And the TV's AI is the actor, performing the script in real time, painting the pixels on the screen locally.
That is a brilliant way to conceptualize it, honestly. The TV is regenerating the image on your end based on the mathematical instructions from the server. Doing this drops the bandwidth requirement from a completely unmanageable 150 megabits per second down to just 45 megabits per second.
Wow.
It totally immunizes the stream against those minor network jitters we talked about.
So the technical barriers, the lag, the graphics processing, the bandwidth bottlenecks are totally obliterated. But, you know, whenever a technology shifts this dramatically, the money shifts even faster.
Oh, without a doubt.
We need to talk about what this means for the business of gaming.
It triggered an economic earthquake. The old model of the gaming industry was completely dismantled. Historically, Sony and Microsoft operated on a loss leader model.
Right.
They would manufacture a physical console, spend hundreds of millions on R&D, sell that box to you at a financial loss, and then pray they could make that money back over a seven-year generation by taking a 30% cut of every $70 physical game disc you bought.
They relied on you buying software to subsidize the heavy hardware in your living room.
Exactly.
But now, we've entered the era of the software as a service monopoly. Consumers are paying a recurring $20 a month for all-inclusive access.
Yep. SaaS is king now.
And that steady monthly recurring revenue funds the data centers. It feels like we need a better analogy than just Netflix killing Blockbuster.
I agree.
This shift is more like moving from owning your own personal car to being forced to rely entirely on a corporate-owned high-speed train system.
That's a good comparison.
Right. You don't have to pay for gas, you don't pay for maintenance, and you get to travel at 200 miles an hour. But you lose the vehicle, you lose the keys, and you lose the total freedom of deciding exactly where and how you want to drive.
And the financial returns on that new train system are staggering. According to the Tech and Mag data, Microsoft makes more pure profit from Xbox cloud subscriptions in one single quarter of 2026 than they made from two entire years of physical Xbox Series X hardware sales combined.
One quarter. That is insane.
It is a complete inversion of how capital flows in the industry. The cloud market cap exploded by 1,900% to $120 billion. Meanwhile, the physical game disc retail market crashed by 94%.
94%. So it's basically gone.
It is facing total extinction.
Which didn't just wipe out retail stores like GameStop and Best Buy, who, by the way, saw an 80% footprint collapse. It completely nuked the entire hardware supply chain simultaneously.
Oh, yeah. The collateral damage to the supply chain was severe and incredibly swift. Think about a company like AMD.
Right, the chip makers.
For years, they relied on massive, guaranteed bulk orders for the custom APUs that powered millions of PlayStations and Xboxes sitting under people's TVs. Overnight, that consumer demand cratered.
That's rough.
But look at NVIDIA. NVIDIA's valuation skyrocketed. Because while consumer hardware died, Microsoft and Sony had to physically build the cloud. They rushed to buy tens of thousands of enterprise-grade RTX 6080 super GPUs.
Because enterprise hardware is fundamentally different.
Right. Completely different. It's built for sustained 2047 loads and massive shared virtualization to run dozens of games simultaneously. NVIDIA essentially supplied the picks and shovels for the cloud gold rush.
It represents a massive wealth transfer from consumer silicon to enterprise silicon. Though looking at the entire landscape capitulating to the cloud, we have to mention the one fascinating outlier in all of this. Nintendo.
The survival masterclass.
Always doing their own thing.
Always. While Sony and Microsoft fully embraced the server farms, Nintendo built the physical Switch 3. They recognized early on that they couldn't compete in the 8K photorealism arms race. So they leaned heavily into their specific moat: eccentric offline gameplay, unique physical form factors, and local couch co-op.
But even they aren't blind to the shifting tides.
True.
They secretly sneaked a hidden cloud API into the Switch 3 operating system. If you really want to play something massive and demanding like Cyberpunk 3 on it, it seamlessly streams it from the cloud so the handheld doesn't literally melt your hands.
Yeah, exactly. Even the ultimate holdout recognizes that cloud computing is the baseline infrastructure now.
Which brings us to the core tension of this transition, this seamless access, these massive corporate profits, the flawless technological execution. It all comes at a very specific, very steep cost to the consumer.
It does.
Here's where it gets really interesting. Mm-hmm. The tech works and the companies are getting incredibly wealthy. But what do you, the listener, actually get to keep in this new ecosystem. Let's say I'm a dedicated physical collector. I love having the game cases lined up on my shelf. I like owning my media. What if I still want to buy a premium physical edition of a game in 2026? What am I actually walking out of the store with?
The stark reality of digital rights management in 2026 is uncompromising. You own absolutely nothing.
Nothing.
You are paying for a temporary access token. If you go out and spend $200 on a premium collector's edition that comes with a beautiful steelbook case, an art book, and a statue, when you open that steelbook case, there is no disc inside.
No cartridge either, right?
No cartridge. You just get a piece of plastic with a QR code called a holographic cloud access token.
Meaning, my ability to play the game is entirely contingent on a server that I do not control and that could be shut off at any moment.
It is the ultimate localized extreme of DRM. Your access can be revoked unilaterally.
That's terrifying.
Consider the licensing issues that plague the industry. If you are playing a massive open-world game like Grand Theft Auto, and a 10-year music license for a specific pop song on the in-game radio expires, the publisher doesn't just patch the song out anymore.
What do they do?
They can legally and permanently delete the entire game from the cloud to avoid lawsuits. Your $200 access token becomes instantly worthless and the game is just gone forever.
Wow. This forces us to really weigh the pros and cons here. The trade-offs are incredibly heavy. Let's look at the green corner first, the sheer benefits of this system. Number one, zero hardware costs. You never have to drop $500 on a plastic console or thousands of dollars on a PC upgrade cycle ever again.
Huge plus.
Number two, infinite fidelity. You are playing games rendered on $40,000 data center GPUs. You are getting that true path tracing and fluid dynamics that a local box could never mathematically handle.
Mm-hmm.
And number three, ultimate portability. You can pause a massive 8K RPG on your living room TV, walk out the front door, and resume it seamlessly on your iPhone while riding a subway without dropping a single frame.
And those benefits are what convinced billions of people to opt in. But we have to look at the red corner, the hidden costs. First, the absolute zero offline mode.
Right.
If you have a minor internet outage or even just a routing glitch with your local ISP, you are instantly ejected from your single player campaign. You cannot play a game on an airplane without incredibly robust Wi-Fi. Second, the data usage is astronomical.
Oh, the data caps.
Yeah. Streaming uncompressed 8K neural video, even with the AI hallucination doing the heavy lifting, still consumes roughly 15 to 20 gigabytes of data per hour.
Per hour, which is going to absolutely shred any monthly data caps people might have with their internet providers. You could blow through a terabyte data cap in a single weekend of heavy gaming.
Easily. But the final con is perhaps the most economically damaging to the consumer. The total death of the used game market.
That's the big one.
You cannot lend a game to a friend when you finish it. You cannot trade a game in to a retailer to recoup your costs. For decades, younger gamers relied on the ability to trade in three old games to afford one new release.
Yeah, that was a rite of passage.
That entire economic avenue is mathematically impossible now. The secondary market has been entirely eradicated.
Bringing this all together for you listening.
Yeah.
The era of the physical console wasn't just killed because the technology got better. It was replaced because a closed, subscription-based ecosystem is vastly more profitable for the corporations and vastly more scalable. We, as consumers, collectively agreed to a massive trade. We traded our physical ownership, our ability to play offline, and our secondary markets in exchange for frictionless, instant access, and absolute infinite graphical fidelity. We chose the convenience of the cloud over the permanence of the disk.
We made that trade willingly. And this raises an important question looking toward the future.
What's that?
Well, the Tech and Mag article doesn't just stop its analysis in 2026. Their senior strategists have a brief, highly speculative prediction for the 2030 horizon, focusing on the rapid integration of brain-computer interfaces, or BCI.
Right.
They predict a near future where computation is completely untethered from external screens entirely, a space where AI generates reality on the fly, responding in milliseconds directly to your neural impulses.
So you don't play the game on a TV. You physically inhabit the simulation within your own mind.
Exactly. And if the gaming industry has already proven in 2026 that it can successfully condition us to completely surrender our ownership of the hardware and our ownership of the software simply in exchange to convenience, what happens when the game isn't just code on a screen anymore?
Oh, man.
What happens when it's a generative reality fed directly into your brain? Who truly owns your experiences, your memories, and your digital life when a corporation holds the exclusive digital rights to the simulation you physically inhabit?
That is a wild, slightly terrifying thought to leave on. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. Look at that empty space under your TV a little differently tonight, and always keep questioning the evolving digital world around you. We'll catch you next time.